CliffCentral.com.
Wednesday morning, the 19th of January, and we are at 7 o'clock. What's happening? Well, there's lots going on in the world. A very, very exciting big deal between Microsoft. Yeah, that's Bill Gates. Huh? You've got to give the guy credit. I know he's not in charge at Microsoft anymore, but he's still in the background, obviously, moving things around, right? He's still there when they need to call him and ask him, hey, should we pay $70 billion for a gaming company? And he's involved in farming, and he's involved in pharmaceuticals, and he's involved in everything. That guy is just a machine for making money. He really is. Whether you like him or not, you got to tip your hat to the guy, because my God, is he a smooth talker, fast thinker, and money maker. He really is all of those things.
And a feminist, because he just made a woman incredibly rich.
You mean his ex-wife? Yeah.
Yeah, incredibly. There's no way she would have ever made that money on her level of talent, whatever it may be, but if she hadn't met him.
I'm sorry, what if her talent was spotting Bill Gates and marrying him? Doesn't she deserve the money then?
Whoa, no.
Give this woman credit. Excuse me.
Until Stedman Graham gets his credit, I will never give another woman for supporting anyone. Stedman never gets his credit. Stedman spotted Oprah in 1986. And you've never heard a word from Stedman. Mm-hmm. He even lets Gail sleep in the big guest house room, whatever's going on. Stedman Graham is the greatest spotter of talent in the history of mankind. It's just unbelievable. So until I hear Stedman is the rock behind Oprah, I'm not giving anyone else credit. Shout out to Bill Gates.
Yeah. Here we go again. Wow, here we go again with you and Stedman. I reckon you're the one who should have married Stedman the way you talk about this guy.
I wish I'd met him. I met him at the time. I was only born in 86.
Listen, I know this is something that people worry about and think about and wonder about. Maybe not worry, but they think about it often. But if you met someone who maybe they tick, you know, 2 or 3 out of 5 of the boxes for you. I'm just simplifying things. But they were your meal ticket to becoming very, very rich. I don't see a lot of people who'd be able to say no to that. I know if I met somebody and let's say, you know, she's the heir to a huge fortune, I would never, ever have to work again. But maybe she wasn't the most attractive to me or let's say I didn't really get along with her. Like maybe we didn't get each other in terms of sense of humor or whatever. Those things that we discussed yesterday with Nibang. I would still do the deal in terms of... you know, the get married, get the money, get in there, see how long I could last, like a rodeo pony.
But how rich are we talking? Like $4 or $5 billion dollars?
No, big. Oh. Yeah, no, we need to talk big.
You mean like that number?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look, once you get past 200 million in anything, then you never really have to worry about money again.
Guys, let me plug you to the game. Something I was brought up with. It's a saying that my grand always says, which basically translates that the looks of a man is in his wallet. There's no ugly millionaire. There's no ugly billionaire. There's no ugly trillionaire. What do you mean? There's none of that. Have you seen Jay-Z? Did you see his wife, Beyonce? Guys, come on now. Like, if you got a couple of zeros behind your name, I'm sorry, you're not ugly anymore. You actually a good-looking guy. I'm like, oh, hey, how are you? Let's talk. Okay. Come on now.
Yeah, all right.
Play the game, yeah.
No, fair enough.
There's no ugly for sure. Guys. No.
The man's looks are in his wallet. Wow. Unbelievable.
In his wallet, yeah. It's a poor thing.
Wow.
But I agree, and I'm big on the first somebody once told me, a wise woman said, first marriage for money, second one for love. And for me, though, it needs to be, I need to start getting into the billions of dollars, because in the hundreds of millions, I feel like that's people I'd meet. But once we start to get to that different life now, I'm on the yachts, I'm with Roman Abramovich, I'm with Lord Sugar. That's a whole different way to live, you know? I don't know if like 100 mil, 200 mil is that different from how I live now?
Oh, come
but
on.
Once you...
Wait. So you're saying you're already rocking a 200 mil lifestyle?
Well, what are
you
mean? No, there are billionaires. No, but there's billionaires. Like, there are multi-hundred millionaires in the area I live in.
And you're just saying you're on that level. Currently, you are on that level.
I live around that. I don't live around Roman Abramovich. Like Roman Abramovich has a yacht where he paid the Red Hot Chili Peppers $3 million for one song. Now, his daughter takes me into a different life.
Yeah.
I want to hang out with the Sultan of Brunei.
But first of all, you'd have to learn some Russian pretty quickly.
Yeah, that's also true.
So you got to meet these people halfway. You got to think about what do you bring to the equation? Because if they just fell in love with you and they just accepted you for who you are, but you didn't have to do any work for it, that's bullshit. That's not going to happen. What do you bring? Can you learn Russian in 3 months?
I think I could if it accessed that life for sure.
All right.
Yeah.
Because there's always the possibility that she's actually exactly the right person for you. You don't have to worry about none of those boxes being ticked. Let's say, you know, she's beautiful. She loves you. You love her. You get along. You have similar interests, all that kind of thing you might discover. But then you still have to man up and bring some other stuff to the party too. Maybe they want you involved in the family business. Maybe they want you to fly the family helicopter, and you need to get a license to do that. Maybe you need to do a bit of the more dangerous stuff for them. Like you become their fixer. You become the guy who has to take out some baddies for them. You know, how about that? Then you do that.
I do like Russians.
You bring all of that stuff.
I do like Russian people. I lived there for 6 months. It's a good question. I don't want to just probably there is a number. Everybody has their number. Yeah, for Roman money, yes.
Okay.
Let's say yes. Let me be honest.
Right.
I would do it if it, like Roman Abramovich's daughter came to me and said, "See on," and she wasn't quite my type. We're still on. Yeah.
Well, I'm getting a warning here from Corona's Boring. Says check when your insurance was phoning you about the premiums. It wasn't because Mbulela was changing the beneficiaries. Apparently. Carl says, Mbulela, please remove your head from your ass. You live in a flat in four ways, but if you had 200 million rands, a $200 million life, you'd be very different.
First of all, I don't live in four ways, Carl. So let's make that very clear from the beginning. Very, very clear. I haven't lived in four ways. Please, I live in four ways. I mean, come on. So that's first of all. And I do have a billionaire who lives on my road. So have some respect, you know what I'm saying? In dollars, by the way. So, you know, have some respect, Carl. Just, you know, I got to put that out there.
Sounds like you...
Some of us don't have potholes on our roads.
No. What if the daughter is fat? Mbulelo says, lady.
Yeah.
But you get into shape, huh?
But she's Roman Abramovich's daughter, huh?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Morning runs together.
That is when I myself would put it... I'd put aside that rule about... Yeah.
So tough for me to overlook that.
But just think also, Mbulelo, you because it's Roman Abramovich, you're going to be able to, in the sporting world, you'll get to know and meet everybody you've ever wanted to meet, right? Instant access.
The thing about
the VIP box. People will introduce you not as, hey, this is Mbulelo. They'll go, this is Roman's son-in-law.
Oh, that is pretty when you put it like that.
Mm-hmm.
No, I can't overlook fat. No,
really,
that's the one. Sorry, that's the one thing.
With a price tag of billions.
So you don't even.
Yes.
No, I can't overlook fat. No. I'm sorry. That's one thing. That's the one thing. Can she not be anything else? Like four toes or something? Not.
You're acting like you can't change. You know.
No, you can't. Looks. People don't change.
You can lose weight. You can. Become fit.
If you're Roman Abramovich's daughter and you're still overweight,
yes,
there is no changing you. saving that.
And how much money she has. Whole journey. Come on. Now. I'm just saying that you can change. If you meet the right person that motivates you to be like, let's do this. A lot of people are saying,
but you guys, we're playing a game here. I mean, I see Corona's Boring and Robin and a whole bunch of other people saying, but she won't be fat because she's Abramovich's daughter. But we're trying to create a situation where Mbulelo is forced to abandon his principles because there's so much of a reward.
Yeah, I can't overlook fat.
Here's a good question, is more of a lifestyle thing. Annette says, how fat is fat? Where do you draw the line?
Yeah, well, I don't want to stop being mean about it. Like, I don't want to, like, I do have super stringent standards.
Yeah.
Like, for me, if you're not athletic, I don't need you carrying around extra weight.
I mean, Simpiwe and I are not athletic. I couldn't run the marathons that you do, so we're fat. You think we're fat?
You said it. I mean, but I'm also not.
You son of a bitch. Son of a bitch. How do you like that, Simpiwe? All right.
Okay. We see you now, Mbulelo.
Yeah. We see what we're dealing with. Oh, man. All right. Other stuff. We've got to move on. We've got to have other stuff.
You actually made me anxious there. Like you, I had to make a real decision. Like,
I
started thinking, how fat is she? Is it just maybe her diet? Could I change her diet? Like in my mind, I was just running through the things. Like maybe that extra 5 kgs could come off because I just make sure we're skiing most of the time. Or like I was trying to run a few scenarios in my head.
I do want to move on to something else because I've got a problem I need help solving. When do you throw people off or exit a group on WhatsApp yourself? Let's say there's a group of your friends, you've been on there for a while, and it's not necessary for you to be there anymore. There's too much going on, or there's too little going on, or there's someone who's a lurker on the group. You know, in other words, they've stopped interacting for about a 3-4 month period. You don't really need to make a big deal of it, but you should probably just remove them from the group. Is there a protocol that you should follow to do this? Does it matter? Are we being super sensitive about it? Because some people just really don't care. Like, for example, if you take me off a group, I don't care, right? I'm not worried about it. It's not going to hurt my feelings, especially if it's a group that's around a specific event. Like, let's say there's a birthday party coming up and everybody creates this WhatsApp group. Then I'm only too happy if you shut the group down or remove me or whatever. Even if the group carries on without my knowledge and people are even talking there and I'm not part of it anymore, that's fine. So I'm not sensitive, but other people might be. So is there a protocol you should follow? Do you have to warn people in advance? Do you go, hey guys, I'm going to be shutting down this group just to let you know. So I'm removing you one by one, blah, blah, blah. Is there a procedure that you should follow? And should you be especially careful of this or is it okay because people are going to be like me and they're not going to care?
Well, Simpiwe, her New Year incident.
Yes.
So Simpiwe's New Year's incident, where she was the only person who got kicked out of a New Year's party, started with this. So maybe Simpiwe is the perfect person to ask. You've come to the right place for help here, Gareth.
So yeah, she had it happen online and then she had the real world exclusion from the group. She actually got kicked out of the group in the real world.
No, she kicked out the girl who where there was the problems got kicked out of a group that Simpiwe and the friends were a part of. And
right.
Now it's coming out, I would imagine. Simpiwe was probably a big part of that, of her getting kicked out.
We didn't kick her out. Let's clarify that. Uh-oh. She left on her own accord. Okay? All right. I would say it depends. As you said, if it's like a birthday situation, hey guys, let's create this group so we can coordinate and be happy. Great. I don't care if you kick me out, I'll leave. That's fine. But if you guys are my mates, you know, or it's a work setup, please tell me, like, say, hey guys, I'm either closing the group or I see that you're not as active, so I'm just gonna kick you out and I'll update you privately. I think that's just a decent thing to do. If you are like one of my close friends, and especially if we've had the group for years, why are you kicking me out? Are we no longer friends? Hi. No, you need to explain. Like, explain to me what's going on, and then I'll be like, oh, okay, cool. That's it.
Okay. All right, so you do need an explanation. I'm still not 100%
clear. Yeah, just
clear.
Like when someone leaves the group. Like, I'd like to know, why are you leaving the group? If everything was fine, why are you leaving the group? Oh, no, messages. I'm done with WhatsApp. Oh, okay, cool. That makes sense.
All right.
It's the same way when you kick somebody out. Hey, guys, you know, you're not an important member anymore. please leave or we're taking you out.
See, that's cool. You just said it now. The line that I'm worried about is you're not an important member anymore. So if you're disposing of somebody, if you're kicking someone out of a group, that's where I'm concerned that there needs to be a protocol. So if anybody has any suggestions as to how that you can navigate this properly, that's what we want to know.
Before can I ask for a little bit more information?
Before we make terrible mistakes.
Is it family?
No,
is
it's not friends? A family thing. Yeah, so there's a friends group.
Okay, because the context is important.
Mm. It's a friends group.
It's a friends group. Oof. Is the person male or female?
Group for years.
No. Oof. So this is not like a... Look, it depends. I mean, you might have... I might be talking about a group that's been going for years. In which case, I suppose people come and go, right? And that happens. So over the long period of time, it's going to look like nothing. But in that moment, you have to be careful to look after people's feelings because you don't want to end up with someone feeling that they've been kicked out because there's an issue. And there really isn't. There are no issues here. We're not kicking anyone out. It's just that they haven't really participated in the group meaningfully for a while. So it's time for them to go. It's time to...
Male, female. Are they male, female, or will this give away too much?
Yeah, okay, so in the one case it's a female, in the other case it's a male, so I'm not really helping you to narrow it down. Why would narrow it down? Why would it make a difference?
Because male and female people respond very differently to rejection, trust me.
Explain. Yeah. So you do see it as a rejection.
I mean, that's why the context is important. Like if you're out and it's your friend, like, are they talking about me? You know, people view the world this differently. The final question for me before I give you my opinion, are they in a relationship with anyone in the circle? So would it have effects beyond just, okay, this person's going to sulk for a while?
No, not really.
Okay. Ah, then
just do it.
They must go.
Well, yeah, I mean, no. Like Peter says, who the hell cares? It's a chat group, right? I mean, he says this is ridiculous. Peter says, who the F cares? It's a chat group. Fine. Fair enough.
See, that's what a guy would say.
Yeah,
this is why it's important that I ask you: is it a girl? A guy would say that. Yeah,
no, but Mbulelo, yes. I just think when it's just out of the blue, it's courteous to kind of give them a heads up, even if you send them a private message to say, "Hey, I'm about to remove you from the group because of X, Y reasons." It's just a courteous thing to do. It doesn't matter if you're male or female.
Mm.
I have a friend, like we have a group where we have a friend who. She doesn't ever respond to whatever we're talking about or whatnot. So she's no longer part of that group and she understands why. But we did tell her beforehand. It's important to just be courteous, to say, hey, Chief, you know, we see you don't respond to messages, so we'd rather send you private messages.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can respond in your own
time.
So you
have two different approaches here. I like Snae's approach. So Snae sent a really interesting tactic here. She says, I left my church group early in the morning while all the old people were sleeping. They didn't even notice that I left. That's smart. If you leave at 3 in the morning, if you leave at 3 in the morning, then you know what? Sometimes people won't even notice that you've gone, right?
No, but we notice the next day. We notice. That's it depends how active that group is. But we notice when you go back and you're like, who left? What, 3? I'm already. Why did she leave? Who kicked her out? Guys, okay, I'm the worst person to have in a group because I always want to know what happened.
Yeah, like, you like the gossip.
So I was. Oh, I need to. Why did you leave?
Mm.
Like, that's the thing. Why? I need to know the why. Oh, you left because you're unhappy. Oh, okay, sharp. But hey, left the church group. They're going to pray for you. You know they're praying for you, right?
I know
this. They're like, oh, Satan.
Yeah, yeah, so Snae is going to be in trouble when they do find out that she left. Here's the thing, though. I know that this sounds trivial and stupid, but I honestly think most friendships these days, apart from the times when you actually do see each other, which is maybe what, once a week, once every 2 weeks, once every 3 weeks, most of the conversation is happening in these groups. That's where the friendship lives. So I don't love it. I don't love it, but it is a reality. It's a fact of modern existence that most of your communication, whether it's a family group, a friend group, a work group, or whatever, with the people that are in that group, happens online. It happens on the device. It happens in WhatsApp. So I don't want us to make light of this because, you know, you just dismiss it. Like, you know, some of the comments are, oh, who cares? It's just a group. It actually is. It's kind of important and there are repercussions. And while people like Simpiwe want to know all the gossip, and that's absolutely right, because some people are, that's what they're in it for, you know, there are also like real world implications for this. You have friends who will leave a group on WhatsApp And within a couple of weeks, they've actually really left the friendship group. And 100%. you stop seeing them. So it may seem stupid. It may seem, you know, kind of pointless and childish. And this is one of those things people talk about because they're getting together and they want to know how to deal with some bullshit online situation. There are actual real world implications to this. So I think that it matters. I mean, I just leave groups at random, right? I don't want to be on a bunch of groups. And then I do get people who message me privately afterwards, like Simpiwe might. And they say, hey, is everything okay? And I'm like, yeah, everything's fine. I just don't want to be in 100 groups. Otherwise, my phone never stops. That's all. But if I don't explain, if I don't tell them why, they do suspect, and people's imagination runs wild. You know, in the absence of information, they make up a whole story like, oh, it's because this person said this 3 weeks ago. And they've got a whole explanation that's completely unrelated to the truth. Meanwhile, I just left because I didn't want another group on my phone. I've got enough groups. Yeah. You know, they're duplicates too. You're on this one, you're on that one, you're on that. I don't need you on the fourth one as well.
But in your situation, one thing you got to do is, if it's like a friendship group and you guys are tight, you all, the people who get to stay in, mm-hmm. is you all have to decide about a response when that person asks, if that's a possibility. Because the last thing you want is three of you having a different response. Oh, no, I just think so and so. Like, you must all be on board. Otherwise, it can very quickly spiral into something. Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Is whoever's staying in the group and you're getting rid of the other person, make sure that you guys already have it's just that whatever you guys are going to come up with your PR line.
Yeah.
Do not have three or four different ones.
No, don't have three or four different ones. And also, you know, sometimes somebody belongs in one group, but they don't really belong in another one. So you leave them out of that one. But then they find out about the other one anyway. They're like, oh, you guys have a separate group. Oh. Then there's hurt feelings.
Yeah, that's when people are just like, wow, am I not good enough to be in both groups? Damn, sweet.
Wait. Who was it? Wasn't it High Rob who was saying Gord and...
Yeah, he and Gord and Ben and were in a group, yeah.
He was in his feels about that, I remember.
Yeah, exactly. So you see people do take it personally.
And he's a dude.
And he's a dude.
A whole dude, exactly. Lelo.
Exactly.
Cape Town dude. Mm-hmm. Cape Town dude, though.
If you piss people off, says Nikki, they will remove you from the group. The result is less groups. Just saying, yeah, but then you also piss people. Robin says, who cares, Gareth? Just leave. I do. This is not about me leaving. This is about like booting someone else off a group. And I'm not even the admin. So anyway, it's just something that's worth. We need to figure these things out.
You're not the admin. No, then don't stress. No.
Then I can leave alone.
Oh, that changes it. Oh,
not my problem.
You're not admin. Not
unless.
Okay.
Unless, I hate to be the person to ask this question, that you have needle with this person and it's on your mind that it would serve everyone best if they left.
No. I don't think that much about it, really. It came up in the last maybe 2 weeks and someone said something and I thought, that's interesting. But I don't have to make the call myself. I'm just curious about whether... Are there procedures? The See, this is where humans need... We need a guidebook. We need an idiot's guide. We need like step one, step two, step three, and you can figure out how to navigate this stuff because we're figuring it out now on our own. Everybody has a different strategy. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't. You got to be careful. And I'll tell you what, friends is one thing, but if it's a family group, that's a whole other set of dynamics. And my God, you know, sometimes people will put a message on a family group and you just think, wow. We don't need to have that on the family group, do we? You could have private messaged that person.
Let me tell you what happened last night.
Oh, yeah?
I'm at home minding my business. Do I not see a whole, like, group call, right? I check who's calling. It's from the family group. And I'm like, shucks, if I don't answer, it's going to look weird. And if I do answer, I answer and I'm like, hello? And they're like, yeah, we just wanted to talk since people weren't responding to messages and we wanted to confirm that. I'm like, really, guys? Like, at this hour, do I really need to be worried about this event that's going on? Ning, ning. I was like, and then I left. And then there's like messages, why did you leave the call? Oh, guys, no. Leave me alone. Leave me alone.
No. This
I
is
need
no
to
good.
Sleep. Like, family.
No.
Guys.
Yeah.
Well, here are some suggestions. Okay. The beeping of a cell phone drives me mental. I'm not interested in groups, even more beeps. Absolutely hate WhatsApp. When people had to pay for messages, you got a whole lot less shit. That's a good point from David. Okay. V says, I like those WhatsApp groups that post conversations from other WhatsApp groups. That's V. V is deadly. Jade says, start That's a new great. Group with everyone else except that person. If they don't respond to messages, they probably won't even notice. That's
it doesn't work. Because you know what happens? We've done this before with a group of my girls, right? Did this exact thing.
Mm-hmm.
And like somewhere along the lines, people forget they'll have like both group chats because you can't delete the other one. And then they sent a message to the one where the other person was in it.
Yeah.
But like the conversation was not aligning. So she realized, hey guys, yo, it seemed like there's a conversation being had and I'm not part of it. So don't do that. Boy. It's too much admin.
Jean-Jacques says, here we are talking about this. He says, humans need to be an interplanetary species and we're more worried about WhatsApp groups. We deserve to fail as a species. Hey, look, you know what people are like. Interpersonal relations are primary to some people. They don't care about whether or not the Earth's going to survive or not. They're like, yeah, got to get on this WhatsApp group, got to get off that one, got to kick that person. Anyway, Dude69 says Simpiwe is heartless. She kicked that lady out of a virtual group and then still has has her on her mind in real life. Oh, you're okay, well. Are you heartless?
Yeah, that's true.
Are you heartless?
I'm not heartless. I'd like to think I have a heart. You know, I'd like to think I'm considerate, you know, but that doesn't equate to the next person liking me. And I'm not money. Not everybody needs to like me. You know what I mean? So I'm going to live my best life and my truth and doing how I do life. And if you don't like it, I guess, sorry.
Well, I do think there are two or three actual procedures you can put in place to make your life easier if you are swamped with WhatsApp groups and messages and things. Is you switch off notifications. You know, you can turn them off for a year. A whole year. So you mute those things. And that I do on all my groups. So groups, I don't get notifications for. Otherwise, I'll be busy all day. And those things can wait. They're not always important, right? The work ones are, but the rest can wait. And you can also, you can change the ringtones and the notification sounds and all of those things so that you don't necessarily take it as seriously. It can be something much quieter. So you can do all of that. And then not stress about it at all. It helps. It helps. You got to manage these things, man. And that's what we're talking about this morning. I'm not actually interested in whether or not you're getting along with this person or that person. I'm just saying, how do you manage this stuff in terms of allowing it into your day? Because it does affect productivity. It affects concentration. I've got ADD, man. I'm looking around the room the whole time. I'm focused on 17 different things at the same time and probably none of them decently. And then I get a message. Guess what? I'm going to look at that message. I can't sit in a meeting and just concentrate. So this is just another reason, another excuse for me to not focus. And I don't need that anymore. I've got to concentrate. I've got to pay attention. Have you ever taken a chat screenshot, says Andre, and then accidentally sent it to the same person? Makes for awkward small talk. Ooh.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's bad. That's a bad one.
It happens all the time. Oh, all the time. And people are gossiping about somebody, and then they send that gossip to that person instead of the person they wanted to gossip with.
Look what this crazy bitch said. Imagine.
Yeah. Oh, so you think I'm a bitch? That's how I feel. Oh, wow. You think I'm crazy? Oh,
really, Stephen?
Okay. Yo, guys.
That's a bad
one. When that shit happens, you just gotta, that's where you just have to leave, not say anything, let the dust settle. A month later, you might be able to laugh about it or not, but you've that's like a massive, that's a war. That's where you've shot the first, you fired the first shot and now you've got to deal with it. Anyway, it's a good question, and maybe we should ask Dr. Hanan about this, says Robin. Carl says, my WhatsApp notifications are permanently off. No noise, no locked screen notifications, off. Very good.
Yeah, that's my tactic.
I've got a funny, there's something wrong with my settings. I'm not even sure what it is, and I'm pleased about it, so I haven't moaned too much. But my settings for WhatsApp is that unless I go into the WhatsApp app, I don't actually see messages. So they don't come up on my screen. So for some people, that would be terrifying because they'd be like, oh, I'm missing out on things. Only if I go onto the app do I actually see my messages. It doesn't come up normally. And I'm happy with that. I don't know if maybe it's meant to be. It's like the universe telling me something. But I'm thrilled. It doesn't worry me. I will look at WhatsApp messages when I press the app button. That's it. The only time I go in.
Yeah.
So that's useful too. My friend had
We can't ignore this.
No, we can't.
Sorry, Gareth. I just wanted to say quickly before you read the next one is that we can't ignore it because like you were saying is imagine in real life if we had, let's say you, myself, Simpiwe, we would have Sunday lunch every Sunday now.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden I even stopped inviting you to Sunday brunch and you say, oh, have you guys stopped doing it?
Yeah.
And you're like, no, we're still doing it. Like you have to engage with the situation when you break off a pattern of behavior because human beings have evolved to do things in patterns. You know, if the pattern is every Monday, Gareth sending whatever on this group and now I stop getting it. Wait a minute now.
Yeah.
You know, what's going on? Am I being excluded from the tribe? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you see,
so,
but this is exactly why, this is why, like Robin says here, for example, just get off WhatsApp. Nobody's broke a board here. Make a call, finished in cloud. No, don't. I don't want to get a call from you. Yeah. I'm not answering your call. Sorry. So, you send me a voice note. Cool. I'll listen to it. And by the way, oh my God, I got like three of the longest voice notes ever over the weekend, which I only got on Sunday because I hadn't checked my WhatsApp. And it was impossible. I had to listen to this thing. It was like 15 minutes long.
Oh, what? That's a
phone call?
Yeah.
Promise you. While I was walking around, while I was doing other things, and I kept having to press play because it stopped at random. It was so frustrating, man. You know, don't send long voice notes if you're going to send a voice note. And then preferably just text. Just text. It's not hard. If it's so important.
15
fucking minutes. I wanted to kill myself. And it wasn't Gord, for those who are interested. Because, you know, we always used to complain about how long Gord's voice notes were. I'd kill for a Gord voice note compared to this one. 15 minutes.
Anyway. What were they doing? The whole story time? Like, what was going on?
Sort of. I mean,
What are you saying?
I'm not even going to go into it. I'm not even going to go into it, but it was long.
So I'm trying to think of the two things. Is my marriage is falling apart?
It wasn't a personal thing.
So it was just I'm having a little bit of like I really like Michelle, Garrett. But she's not calling me back.
Hi, you. And then it's just going. Oh, my day was amazing because that's how it's. Oh,
so I
let
did
me tell you about this.
I will. I'm not. Then, I'm not ashamed to admit I did skip vast quantities of it and like slid that slider along to just get to the end. So I can't even tell you what the detail of it was. But I could tell it wasn't important, so I just skipped through it. Anyway.
There must be a bachelor or a bachelorette. Hey, there must be a bachelor or a bachelorette. They're bored now, and there's just something on their mind. No, man. 15 minutes, guys. Come on.
Don't you
expect us.
Yes. See, I'm with Carl here. Don't you dare phone me, and don't send me a voice note longer than 40 seconds. I speak to my wife on the phone, and even that's painful. I don't like phone. I'm with him. I don't like a phone conversation. I don't want to have a phone call with anybody. There's no need. If there's information we need to communicate with each other, send me a voice note or a text. If it's not information and you just want to chat, I'm not your guy. Yeah. Other people you can talk to.
But is this 15-minute person a habitual offender, or are we just talking?
This is the first time this has happened.
Oh.
Not even from
and
someone.
Have you told him or her that? Hey,
it's from a herd.
Because you have to manage people.
It's not even someone I speak to that often, so I just ignored it.
Yeah.
I just ignored it, but I didn't respond because there was nothing important in the message. So I didn't need to draft a reply. You know what I mean?
15 minutes is... Yarr.
Well, there is that... some people say you can play these things at double the speed. And then you get to laugh at their squeaky voice as well, but that's still long. 15 minutes at double speed is still like 6.5, 7 minutes, you know? 7.5, 8.
That's too long.
Voice note, no. I will listen to my wife because I live with her, but I'm not interested in listening to anyone else, says David. That's a good point. Oh. Yeah. Listen, one last thing while we're on the voice notes, and then we do have to get to blind history, but this is kind of important. Some people's voices are so terrible that you can't bear to listen to them in a voice note, even if it's 20 seconds long. You must, this is going to be hard to do, but you must find someone who will give you an honest opinion in your voice, because I've got this one friend. She has a very, very annoying voice. Really, really horrible to listen to. And from her, I would rather respond in text, and I would rather get text messages from her. Very squeaky, very whiny, very nasal sort of voice. Not her fault. That's just the voice she's got. But not a voice note person. Like, if she sends you a voice note, you're like, you press it reluctantly, you know? Not good.
My PSA is, it's something that guys do that I've noticed, yeah, is they'll put on this bedroom voice when they're trying to, you know, sound pure. Oh, good.
Yeah.
Oh, leave that. No, just talk. I want to hear your words. I want to hear what you say. Stop with that. Stop with that bedroom voice. And then you're going to send a whole 60-second long voice, and I can't hear what you're saying. Like, hey, bo, chief. Utini. Stop. Stop.
There is also that other thing that, you know, sometimes you're not in a place where you can listen to a voice note. Plus, it comes from someone who you know is probably going to swear, or they're going to say something ridiculous, so you can't listen to it on speaker. So there are some places where if someone sends you a voice note, you're like, sorry, can't listen to this now. Rather just send me a text. That's going to be a shortcut that I need to create my keyboard. Yeah. It's like no VN. And then that's the short code for please don't send voice note now. Can't listen to it. Send me text instead. Comes up automatically.
But is a phone call not the most efficient way to do things?
I don't know, dude. Because I don't know, not so much anymore. Sometimes I don't need to talk to you in real time. If you need me to do something, like let's say, hey, I need you to record this thing for me this morning, then you send me a voice note and I can do it. Don't need to talk to you. What for?
I think phone calls are for, like, if it's urgent. So they say you sent me a text, hey, would you please buy a certain cable, and you realize, okay, she hasn't responded 15 minutes later and it's a bit urgent. Call me. Hey, Simpio, on your way, please bring the cable. Great. Cool. Awesome.
Right.
If you want us to talk, that's, dude, I'm working, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And that's 15, 20 minutes of the day gone to just like, yeah, sure, Mbilela, you're great. Are you awesome? What's going on? Ah, and he did what? No, let's set some time aside then on the weekend. Let me see you have coffee and then tell me about what's really going on in your life. Other than that, send a text, then I can respond when I'm free. That's the thing. Like, we're not all free at the same time. So send a text when I have 5 minutes.
I understand. Like, I know for some people, this is a very frustrating discussion. And some of them are like, wow, why would you talk about WhatsApp and all this stuff for so long? Because we've been talking for 20 odd minutes about it. Fact is, this is the way that we communicate these days. It's probably the primary way we communicate these days. So having the rules and understanding what other people need from you and what you need from other people and setting those rules is actually kind of important. It's not just a fun thing to talk about. These are the things that will take up time. And as Simpiwe says, we all have different stuff going on at different times. We've got to know what the rules are. These are the rules of engagement for this new field of battle. If you're looking at it from a work point of view, or it will determine the new rules of friendship from a friend's point of view. So you have to know what to do. You can't just let these things fly. And if you do, then you're going to be one of those people who has to accept the consequences. If you set the rules, you don't have to worry about the consequences, because for you, these are the boundaries. You know, we always talk about that with interpersonal relations. And if you don't set the rules, then you're just going to be one of those people who has to follow other people's rules. So you choose. That's what it is.
I love what you're saying, because the one truth in my life that I know is every person in your life, if you don't want to be anxious, has to be managed.
Mm-hmm.
You have to manage people.
Mm-hmm.
You don't just presume people are interested in you. No, they're like that person with the 15-minute voice note. That's got nothing to do with you. Yeah. They haven't thought, I wonder what Gareth's going through today. Does he have 15 minutes to go through? Will it cause some anxiety? No, he's thought, I have stuff to say for 15 minutes. It's about me. And now he wasn't managed, because he won't manage himself. So clearly now my man needs to be put in a box, say, chief, 2 minutes, or otherwise, you know, we're going to have an issue. You need rules. You know, law is order and all that. You know, law is order, and good law is good order, is what they say. So 100%.
All right.
Who knew? WhatsApp.
Look at this. And I'm telling you, we may have just touched on something which requires even further investigation. We will have to see how that goes. It is time for us to check in on a brand new episode of Blind History and the start of these episodes for 2022. And we've got a new one. This is episode 6 in the final series, or the latest series of Blind History. So let's take a look. His name is Hannibal. He's the famous general of ancient history who held Rome by the throat. And today I think you get to hear more of the detail around this extremely interesting guy, his life and adventures. And unfortunately, because Rome ultimately won, Rome wrote the history. So we don't know as much about Carthage as we do about Rome. But what an incredible empire that was. And what an incredible general Hannibal was. You'll hear all about that now in another episode of Blind History. It's, of course, brought to you by Taylor Blinds and Shutters on cliffcentral.com on this Wednesday morning. Take a listen. Interested in, because he comes from a period of history which just seems to have been so glorious. Like the risks and rewards were so big, and everything these people did was on such a monumental scale. And this guy, without putting too fine a point on it, was an enormous character in the time. He was born around 247 BC, died in about 183 to 181 BC. And he came from a place called Carthage, which is in the far north of Africa, the northernmost part of Africa, where Tunisia is today. And it's very hard for us to try and get any kind of feel for what the Carthaginians were, because they were completely wiped out by the Romans much, much later. And in the prelude to that, you encounter the story of this great general Hannibal. And that is what we're talking about today. So Anthony Meader and I here to tell you all about Hannibal, the great Carthaginian general and statesman.
And arguably one of the greatest generals of all time.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because one of the things that kept coming up in the three books that I read was that this guy was a master tactician, and his battles are still to this day regarded as textbook battles, textbook ambushes. Every strategic and tactical move that he made was a masterpiece.
At the time, Rome called them dirty tactics, and then Rome started employing them themselves. And, you know, it's phenomenal. You know, if you look at his whole life, and a lot of people look at the beginning part of his life, and especially as he crossed the Alps, that's what he's so famous for. But once he was left Carthage, and it was just very sad what happened to him, because he's extremely loyal, his life after that was incredible too. You know, he just never stopped shocking everybody with what he could achieve and biological warfare, you know.
Exactly. He's credited. I'm so glad you brought that up too, because he was credited with being the first person to ever employ biological warfare. And we'll talk about that later, because it comes towards the end of his story. But this guy was born to an aristocratic family in Carthage, and Carthage was a very powerful mercantile state. Now, if you can imagine, most of the North African coastline, which was then quite a fertile and busy place, it wasn't mostly desert and, you know, run down. And most of the Iberian Peninsula, which is where Spain, certainly southern and eastern Spain are, was all in the Empire of Carthage at its height. And his father was a guy called Hamilcar, who fought in the First Punic War. There were three of those. His younger brothers were called Mago and Hasdrubal, and he had both of them by his side through all of the wars. And his brother-in-law was the guy who took over after his father was killed in battle, and his name was also Hasdrubal. Great names, huh? Hasdrubal the Fair. Yeah. So he was the good-looking Hasdrubal.
Yeah, he was the good. Yeah, 100%. He was the good-looking. And but Carthage was the center of the known world, as they called it then. And I think the point that you made is they were with Phoenician background. They were traders. So first and foremost, you know, they were not warriors, but traders. They were not conquerors, but they were traders. But his dad and Hannibal were just unusual, you know, such strong generals. The family was just so strong. And that's where they managed to do the incredible things they did. And if he did decide to go for Rome, the world might have changed. There might not have been a Roman Empire. That's how, yeah, how close the whole world could have been to changing because of this one individual.
So his father, Hamilcar, took him apparently before he went at 9 years old. I mean, imagine being nine and going with your father to battle. He took him to a temple and made him swear a lifetime oath of hatred to Rome, and that he would eventually destroy Rome, because Rome had won the first Punic War under Hamilcar, and they had really imposed some very unfair penalties on the Carthaginians. You know, huge taxes, they had massive war debts they had to repay. And so Carthage was not particularly thrilled with Rome at this time, and they went and took them on in the Iberian Peninsula, and the Romans made friends with people in a place called Saguntum. And Hannibal managed to attack that place in 218 BC, and he taught the Romans a lesson because he burnt it to the ground and inflicted huge losses on the people of that area. But what he started to do was he also started to win them over, because he was quite charming and charismatic, and he realized, you know, supply lines from Carthage into Europe would take a very long time. So he started making friends with all the people the Romans had pissed off, and slowly they started to turn their allegiance to Hannibal. And that was where he made this famous move, where he decided he's going to go for Italy. He's going to go for the eye of the dragon. And he, instead of doing what they thought he would do, and the Romans had prepared to meet him along the southern coast of France, you know,
and
easy entry.
They blocked
that entrance. And instead of doing that, in the middle of winter, in the worst possible conditions, and if you've ever been to the Alps, let me tell you, in the middle of winter, when it's snowing and there's ice and it's freezing cold and people are dying from frostbite and animals are dying. And remember, he went over the Alps with elephants and horses and 40,000 men. I mean, this was a brave move. Everybody thought 100%. He was going to die, including probably most of his own people. But they made it through. They came out on the other side of the Alps at the Po Valley, and they were ready for the Romans.
It was a traumatic journey, going through the Alps, massive heights, freezing cold, elephants falling off cliffs. You know, and imagine this is 2,000 odd years ago, 2,200 years ago. You cannot imagine. And a lot of historians have tried to track where he went in modern days to try and understand, you know, how he did this. And every time that they do this, they get blown away and how he managed to do that. And he shocked the Romans, for that matter.
Well, they'd never even seen elephants for a start. I mean, they certainly didn't expect elephants in Italy. You can imagine.
100%.
No chance of that before. And then he won these succession of victories. And we're going to stop at whichever one you want to stop at. But the Battle of the Trebia was a brilliant move. It was shortly after they'd come down from the Alps, and he realized he needed to win fast. But the losses that the Romans took in these three battles, Trebia, Lake Trasimene, and obviously Cannae, which is probably the greatest battle he ever fought, all of them, like the whole way down Italy, basically, the Romans must have lost 20% of their population. Certainly 80% of their men died in the Battle of Cannae. It was a slaughterhouse. Apparently his brother, Mago, eventually, when he went back to Carthage to show the Carthaginians how great their victory was, he emptied out a jar of signet rings onto the floor of their Senate. And each of those signet rings represented one of the noble families who'd gone to war against Hannibal and been killed. So he was absolutely incredible.
Yeah, one in five of the young and up-and-coming members of the army, the Roman army, were killed. It was an absolute slaughter. But at that point, he had Rome at his feet, and he could have marched on Rome. But the difference between Hannibal and Alexander the Great is that he was extremely loyal to the people back at Carthage, which didn't deserve it. And they didn't show him any support, you know, for him to do the final step. And he decided not to do that. And there's so many questions still asked on why he didn't actually flatten Rome ultimately in the end after Cannae, because he was really, really on top of his game. And in that battle, he made the Romans stare into the sun. It was a dusty terrain. So they, I mean, just first of all, they had so much challenges even before they started fighting.
But it's worth saying that the Romans had about 80,000 men there, and he had maybe half that. And what was so clever about it was that he knew that they were going to deploy very, very tight formations. And he would deploy his men in a much more spread out fashion. And he put his strongest men on the wings and his weakest ones in the middle. And the Romans attacked the middle, thinking that was where his forces were concentrated. And what happened was that the wings steadily started to creep around the sides of this very tightly packed Roman force. Apparently they were so tightly packed, they couldn't even swing a sword in the middle. People were being crushed like at a rock concert. And he managed to envelop them and then sent in people from the back. So they were surrounded on all four sides and they were just cut down.
There were 70,000, depending on which book you read, 55,000 to 70,000 Romans.
Dead.
Most of the books in that time, I think it was Livy. They were all obviously pro-Roman. They were Romans. They were so scared of Hannibal. You know, they used to have jokes 300 years after Hannibal's time. They used to say, Hannibal's at the gates, Hannibal's at the gates. And the kids used to run away. They always used to play, you know, those games.
Now, listen, he was extraordinary. And this was probably the height of his power. And the Battle of Cannae is in any military book of strategy regarded as the magnum opus of battle tactics. Anyway, he then, after lingering a little bit and again not deciding to attack Rome, he suddenly realized that Carthage itself was under attack by a guy called Scipio Africanus, who forced him to return to Carthage. And that was essentially the beginning of what they called the Third Punic War. And this was probably when things started to go not so well for him, because he was defeated at the Battle of Zama, which ended the war in a Roman victory. And the Romans were merciless after that. They absolutely razed the place to the ground. They made it pretty much impossible for people to live there. They famously poisoned the wells. It was awful. They chased Hannibal into voluntary exile, even though he'd taken political office and had tried his best to restore Carthage to something. It was a mess. It was an absolute disaster. And Rome just were merciless.
Just to paint a little picture, or to just explain on Scipio Africanus. So his dad fought Hannibal. First of all, his dad blocked Hannibal to cross from Spain into Italy. And then further on, as he came down into the Po Valley, he was the first person that they met, and he was severely injured by Hannibal's onslaught. But what happened was Hannibal was on the Italian peninsula for 15 years, and Scipio went to school. And he learned everything about Hannibal and how his tactics worked and how to use them. And effectively, he did use them at Zama against him. Hannibal went back to support his country that he loved so much. And Scipio used a lot of his tactics. He used elephants. He wasn't at his greatest strength, it has to be said, because his army was decimated. They got weaker and weaker on the Italian peninsula. And he was on the back foot, but Scipio was formidable. But as much as Scipio hated him, he admired him.
Well, didn't Hannibal also, by this stage, he'd lost an eye?
He'd lost an eye in the Po Valley from infection, correct, already quite early on in his battles. So Zama was very sad, and they were very harsh, the Romans. But Scipio, whatever the Roman Senate wanted to do, because they hunted him until he died, he actually pushed back. And he in the end went into exile, Scipio Africanus, because he just did not agree with what the Roman Senate wanted to do. But effectively, the oath that he made to his dad and the sacrifice that they made ran so deep in his veins that he could never give up trying to win one over the Romans. But he went into politics at the time after the defeat at Zama, and then once again, as you mentioned, in the First Punic War. The Second Punic War was horrendous, the amount of money they had to pay. But he turned that country around. He took out a lot of the oligarchs and the type of people that would stay there forever and corruption. And he started putting in good processes. He uplifted the farms. And he could pay that debt back in 2 to 5 years. And the Romans refused to receive lump sums. Plus, they were working together with the old leadership, those corrupt individuals in Carthage. And then ultimately, in the end, they expelled him.
Yeah, and you can imagine how frustrated he was at that point, because he'd given his life militarily and now politically to try and fix Carthage. And then he gets exiled and he ran off to First, I think he was somewhere in Turkey.
Correct, yes. Greece and Turkey, Antiochus, yeah.
And he was at the court of the Seleucids, Antiochus the Third.
Correct.
And then he ended up in Bithynia, which is like northern Turkey, near where Constantinople, you know, meets with the European continent. And I think that's where he died, but he died on his own terms because apparently he knew that they were coming to get him. And he decided, you're not going to get me. I'm not going to die at the hands of Romans. I will poison myself. And he took some poison and he died.
But that's 25 years since he'd left Carthage. So he evaded the Romans for that long. And he also hurt them. But a lot of the leaders, like you said, Antiochus III and that, they were very, very scared of Rome. So they wanted to defeat them. But when the pressure and the heat got on, they knew every single time the Romans said, we want Hannibal. So Antiochus then was scared that Hannibal would have too much power. So he put him on ships. And he's never been a navy man. He spent his whole life fighting, you know, on land. But that's where he brought in the biological warfare with the snakes.
So what did he do?
So he had baskets of venomous snakes that he put together. And so then they wanted to engage the navy, you know, boat on boat, as they did in those days. So they tossed the baskets full of venomous snakes onto the deck of the Roman boats. So now you must imagine these strong forces just jumped in the water because they had to be bitten by the snakes. So, yes, and they say that's the start of biological warfare, you know.
It's amazing.
And then he had to run away again because when the Romans won, they said, we want him. And he ended up on an outlaw island of Crete, where it was just surrounded by outlaws and there was nobody's going to turn him in.
Mm-hmm.
And it was almost like a pirate island at the time. And it's incredible. And yes, he did take his life. He might have died of infection or take his life. But the thing was that he said, I think that Rome, in his words, he said, Rome will be so happy now that this old man is going to stop tormenting them.
Well, we spoke at the very beginning of this episode about what a great general he was, and he's compared with people like Philip of Macedon, Alexander the Great, Julius Caesar, Scipio Africanus, his enemy, and Pyrrhus.
But I think, like I said in the beginning, Gareth, the big difference was Alexander didn't give a shit about anything happening back in Macedonia. You know, he just took over the world, and it has to be said, he crossed deserts. What he achieved was just phenomenal. But on the same breath, if he wasn't so loyal to Carthage, you know, what would he have done? You know, would it have been the Carthage Empire?
Maybe if it was more about his personal glory, you know, there would have been a state of Hannibal instead of a state of Rome. And he could have been the first emperor of that empire. But it is interesting how all these different characters overlap in history. And you said it too, that if he had decided to sack Rome, if he decided to burn Rome to the ground like they eventually did Carthage, there wouldn't have been a Roman Empire, probably. And the world would have been dominated for all that time by a very strong Carthaginian Empire. And things could have been very, very different.
Yeah, and I think the great Augustus, he actually said, you know, in terms of the administration part, there were certain parts of the administration that he didn't model because Augustus was his own man, but there were certain parts that he took from Hannibal in the way he ran politics after the Second Punic War. So it is. The overlapping is incredible.
Well, I think that his own tactics and strategy played a huge role in helping the Roman army become a professional army. And I think that the influence of Hannibal in history is only diminished by the fact that Rome was so afraid of him and so, you know, completely overwhelmed by this incredible character who gave them their first existential threat and probably the last existential threat until the collapse of the empire. And they've kind of tried to write him out of history, but it shows you how strong this character was, that he still remains in the history books and remains this overwhelmingly powerful specter, though Rome were terrified of him.
Very.
Blind History is brought to you by Taylor Blinds and Shutters. All the episodes are available on the cliffcentral.com website and app, as well as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Apparently, Scipio asked Hannibal who the greatest general of all time was. And Hannibal replied, either Alexander or Pyrrhus, but then himself. So,
and he said that.
Yeah, he knew he was good. Diminished by the fact that Rome was so afraid of him and so, you know, completely overwhelmed by this incredible character who gave them their first existential threat and probably the last existential threat until the collapse of the empire. And they've kind of tried to write him out of history, but it shows you how strong this character was, that he still remains in the history books and remains this overwhelmingly powerful specter, though Rome were terrified of him.
Very.
Blind History is brought to you by Taylor Blinds and Shutters. All the episodes are available on the cliffcentral.com website and app, as well as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Apparently, Scipio asked Hannibal who the greatest general of all time was. And Hannibal replied, either Alexander or Pyrrhus, but then himself. So,
and he said that.
Yeah, he knew he was good. CliffCentral.com.